This podcast is part of the Christian Geek Central Network at ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Strangers and Aliens, Episode 94. Shadow and Substance Series, the Twilight Zone episodes, Nicotine and Nightmare at 20,000 Feet.
Hello and welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast, a podcast about sci-fi, fantasy, and Christianity. I'm Steve McDonald.
I'm Ben Avery. Oops, I skipped. Sorry, Jace.
You scripted part of
this. Is why we have an outline, so I can screw it up.
And I'm apparently Dr. Jace O'Neill.
Okay, well.
And I'm Steve. Oh, wait, what? And we're all part of the Christian Geek Central Network.
That's right, at ChristianGeekCentral.com, where you can find all sorts of awesome podcasts, blogs, and a cool forum, too, where we have our own forum, little forum section that's just for Strangers and Aliens, which is kind of cool.
That is cool.
If people used it. But, yeah.
So use it, guys.
Yeah, well, every once in a while people respond to something I've posted there, but...
Yeah.
So this is a special time of year. We have our 100th episode coming up.
Woo-hoo.
And as you know from Dr. Jace's little intro before the music, which, by the way, that music is still by Tim Leffel, but that's actually the first music he composed for our podcast, and we finally get a chance to use it in something for this series. But
yeah, he does a good job.
Not that it wasn't good enough for the original, but we were looking for something slightly different. We kept this, and thankfully we did, because we like this one too. So. Yeah.
And it fits the tone of what we're talking about with Twilight Zone and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, so if you were listening before the podcast started, that music, Dr. Jace said this is episode 94. That means we're 6 episodes away from 100.
That's right.
No.
And we're just a few weeks away from 2 years as well. And so... our target is to have episode 100 get uploaded exactly 2 years to the day after episode 1 was uploaded.
Yeah.
Which I think would be pretty awesome if we're able to achieve that. It's going to take some calendar gymnastics. But episode 99 is going to be basically a replay of the Lost podcast. Not a podcast about Lost, but a podcast called The Comic Book Crossover that Steve and I did. For our first, when we first started podcasting ever.
This was before Dr. Jace.
Yeah, this is before anything.
B.D.J. Yeah. B. Dr. J.
And,
or, I don't know, B. something. Be nice.
So that's episode 99, which is going to be cool. But episode 100 is also coming up, and we wanted to do something fun for episode 100.
Well, I just wanted to just point out that you guys didn't get very far with just the two of you. We got all the way to 100. After I came on the show, so just want to let you guys, you know.
Oh, yeah, our other show that you're going to be hearing, I think we maybe did 3 episodes.
I think we did
and
3.
And 2 of them got posted.
2 of them got posted.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then our second thing, we got, I think, 11 episodes.
Oh, no, we got further than 11.
I think it was because someone was supposed to die in the 12th episode, remember?
Oh, I thought we got further than that, though.
I think it was 11.
Huh. Well,
it doesn't matter.
It
doesn't matter because this one, see, with the first one, we got into one digit. The second one, we got into double digits. And the third one, we're going to get into triple digits.
Yeah.
So episode 999 will be our last episode.
Oh, sure.
And then we're just going to do, I guess, a different thing to get into.
And then I'm retiring.
Episodes. Yeah, then we'll move to another format, and it'll be a comedy musical.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'll retire before that happens.
Come musical, let's call it.
Right. So anyway, episode 100 is coming up, and so I was asking the guys, what should we do, what should we do? And Dr. J said, well, I listen to some fantasy football podcasts, and they every once in a while do top one. You're going to have to explain this, top 100 players of that week or something like that?
Well, no, what they do is they every week rank players, and which you guys, hopefully you can look on our, because all three of us are in the same fantasy football league, you can actually go to your team and look at ranks. So what they do is they rank players at every position, so you kind of have an idea of who the experts think are going to do the best. So I thought, well, you know, since this is going to be our 100th episode, what if we actually took time and highlighted our top 100 sci-fi and fantasy characters of all time?
Yeah, so that sounds like crazy lots of information, but it's not quite so crazy because I don't think we're going to spend like a whole lot of time on every single character.
No, when we do the episode, we're going to unveil them kind of like they do on fantasy football, how they do on a weekly basis. They usually show like 10 players at a time and usually highlight one or two of those players and then why this person's dropped lower or why this person's up in this spot. So we're going to show you our list and expound on a couple of them, but we, you know, we'd like to hear what other people have to say. What, who would you recommend? Who do you think has to be in the top 100? Who are the obvious ones and who are the obscure ones that need to sneak their way in?
Yeah. So what we're thinking is we're going to be ranking based on our favorites, and then we're going to compile those lists together to get 100. But I think what we want to do is actually invite some ranking from our listeners, right? And
yeah.
Have them write in and give us, I don't know, like their top 10.
Yeah.
And so those will actually help weight the rankings for all the characters that we have in our list. And if there's some obscure characters that get snuck in there, we might mention them. Even if it's like one person who brings up, you know, the Star-Lord from Star Lost or something like that. But, you know.
Squirrel Girl.
Yeah, or Squirrel Girl from the Great Lakes Avengers. Yes.
There you go.
Now, I think Squirrel Girl is getting some more momentum. In fact, at least with my college students, because there's this one group of people that there's a girl they think looks like Squirrel Girl. So they are nicknaming her that, although I'm not sure she's happy about that.
I wouldn't be.
That's nice.
I wouldn't be. Of course, I'm a 40-year-old man. So, okay.
I've been called worse.
So, yes, you can email us feedback@strangersandaliens.com with your top 10 sci-fi fantasy characters, your favorites. And those will be figured into our weighting system. Also, though, if you have a reason for like your top sci-fi fantasy character that you just love, send us that as well, because we are going to use some comments from you as well. So it won't just be us talking about it. We want it to be something that the listeners are involved in our 100th episode. And this is what we came up with. So yeah, for your top sci-fi character, definitely you can send us a short recording or a couple sentences that we could read on the air.
Now, can we narrow it like to what, like sci-fi, fantasy, comic book characters, but what about, you know, Robinson Crusoe, something like that? You know, where's the limit there?
Use your best judgment.
Use your best judgment.
Use your best judgment.
Well, I mean, I think all of us have little cheats that we'd like to sneak in here and there, so it just comes down to whether or not they make the top 100.
Yeah.
So yeah, give it a shot. Try to sneak them in there.
Why are we letting them sneak things in?
For fun. This is all about being fun. Having fun and having our listeners have fun with us. And we're doing it in episode 100. We're telling you now.
Steve, of all people, you should appreciate that. Since you should never narrow down.
No sneaking.
Well, bottom line, it will be episode 100. And so you have a little bit of time. We'll give you a hard deadline in our next episode and also on Facebook. So be aware, it's coming up. And we hope you get ready with us, because we are looking forward to our 100th episode and 100 more. So that said, are you guys ready to move on to our actual main discussion, or is there something else you guys would like to touch on?
No sneaking.
All right. Well, you know, we do have some veto power, Steve. So although I have a feeling Walter White is going to be in the list.
It's not a fantasy sci-fi.
It is sci-fi.
It's not.
It is. It is sci-fi.
Nope.
Well, I guess there's science and it's fiction, so I think I win. Anyway.
Don't think so. Go ahead.
We don't want to talk about the Twilight Zone.
Yes.
And we have been ready to do this. We have been wanting to do this for a long time. I think it's safe to say that all three of us are big fans of the Twilight Zone TV show. Is that...
Shorthand, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never... The only Twilight I know about...
Don't!
Vampires.
No! He said it! Oh. You had to say it.
Of course. Of
it had
course
to be said.
Twilight Zone is one of the best franchises yeah out there.
Yeah, I love the Rush version of the song. I love the way Golden Earring did it. So, you know... Either one that we're talking about, I'm excited.
Should I insert cricket sound effect there?
What are we talking about? Twilight Zone?
Yeah.
The song Twilight Zone off of 2112 from Rush, and the Golden Earring, massive, humongous hit.
So Twilight Zone. when did you guys first see this show and start liking this show?
Well, I picked up the album 2112, I think around 1980.
Should we mute him or
is this all going to be cut out anyway? I think I started watching 2112. I'm sorry. Twilight Zone probably, like, you know, over at my grandmother's house. You know, it was one of those things where she would have us over on a Friday night, and then, you know, we could stay there until a Saturday morning or whatever. And sometimes we would be able to – we just watched whatever we wanted to on TV. Most of the time it was cartoons. But sometimes it was, you know, Outer Limits or Creature Double Feature or whatever. And then every once in a while, for some reason, you know, Twilight Zone. And, you know, it just – it was weird and odd and black and white. But, you know, back when I was growing up, some things were still – you know, there was a lot of black and white stuff. But, you know, it was like this is something that had survived. It was like I Love Lucy, you know, mm-hmm. Those were still on TV. And, you know, the black and white stuff from the 60s, you know, Beverly Hillbillies and stuff. But, you know, this was something different. It wasn't – you know, the same characters every week. And it was something I wasn't used to. And it also, it was very much like the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, which was basically old time radio done in the 70s and early 80s. And, you know, it was the type of thing where I would sneak the radio underneath my pillow and listen to it and, you know, unfortunately fall asleep before finishing the episode. But, you know, every night it was on every single night. And so the Twilight Zone was sort of like this visual representation of the stuff that I would be listening to. So
and that's interesting because that actually, I mean, that's the tradition that the Twilight Zone type anthology horror series kind of comes from, is mm-hmm. kind of the old time radio horror anthology series.
Right.
But Dr. Jace, how about you? When did you first start discovering that Twilight Zone was awesome?
I have no idea. I just know it's almost as since my earliest memories when it comes to sci-fi, probably because I believe my dad was a fan of the show, because I remember when I was really little, we lived in kind of like this upstairs of this house, and we had this little black and white TV, and I didn't even have a bedroom. I slept on the couch in the living room, and we'd watch, you know, black and white Twilight Zone. And of course it's a black and white TV, so I didn't realize there was color out there. but you know, it's almost become a tradition that either New Year's or somewhere during the holidays or during October, we go through and we binge watch Twilight Zone. I know it's been on I think the Sci-Fi Channel for the last several years as a marathon on New Year's, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, it's almost become a tradition, and you know, it is one of my favorite shows because I like the fact that you have a different story every week, and many of them have these really simple truths. It's kind of like, in a way, it's a little bit like a visual Aesop's Fables or Grimm's Fairy Tales in a way.
Yeah.
it's a simple kind of cautionary tale, or and it can go fantasy or sci-fi. So
yeah, a lot of times they had a little moral at the end, you know.
Yeah,
yeah. And I have a similar kind of situation there. My dad, I have memories of going camping and my dad telling Twilight Zone stories around the campfire. Like, just, you know, we'd just be sitting there. It's not like he was telling them to scare me. It was just like, yeah. And then there was this one episode where this happened and then the crazy twist, you know, and so he'd tell me the twist there. But then we also had, we had a little tiny black and white TV, that every once in a while they would do on our local station, they'd do a marathon. And so my dad and I would hole up in his room and we'd eat in there and we'd sit in there and we'd watch, you know, as many episodes as we could possibly stand. And again, it was black and white, so it didn't matter. Those, we were watching it on a black and white TV. But, yeah, most of my early memories of Twilight Zone just come from, you know, spending time with my dad doing that. And really just enjoying it. And then, that being kind of, you know, I was introduced to things like post-apocalyptic worlds because of Twilight Zone. Yeah. And that twist ending that Twilight Zone almost always had.
Right.
And these, just the snappy writing. And there were some stinkers, but they usually weren't played in the marathons. Yeah, the marathons usually were the best of the best.
They usually stuck to the good ones.
And so it wasn't until I started like watching it, you know, just when it was airing like every weeknight. And so they're just going through the entire catalog and then you're going to get one. And, oh, that one wasn't quite as good as the ones that I remember watching.
But you're so tired that, you know, do you really notice every single one that's not as good? Or are you kind of like, oh, I have a question for you guys.
Sure.
Is there a type of Twilight Zone story that you gravitate to? For example, I know that when I watch them, if I'm skipping through them, I almost always skip through to the ones that deal with space or some kind of alien something or other. Do you guys have something like that?
Right now, I'm actually trying to find the ones that are more kid friendly, and that's actually what I'm gravitating toward. Because I'm starting a new tradition where whenever I will have every once in a while, once or twice a month, fish fry Friday. And while I'm frying fish, we'll watch Twilight Zone. And so nice. The kids will gather in the kitchen around my iPad and we'll watch Twilight Zone on Netflix. And so that's kind of what I'm gravitating to right now. But I don't really. I think that I like pretty much anything that they do there. And the space ones are fun. I like the ones that are the kind of personal horror, you know, where it's you're following that one person who's just trying to figure out what in the world is going on.
Yeah,
this world has gone mad, and so what's happening here? Those are probably ones I gravitate to more than like a particular genre. But I even like the comedy ones.
Yeah, that can be funny.
Yeah, I mean, There's some that don't connect with me, but it's not because of the genre.
Right. So. I think for me, it would be probably the space ones, the ones where like someone has a superpower. But I think the ones that I like the best are the ones that at the end you realize that this could happen right here, right now. You know, like the very first one. Where there's the guy who he thinks he's the only person on Earth.
Where is everybody?
Exactly.
Where did everybody go? Exactly. Arby's, roast beef sale.
I won't ruin it because, you know, there might be some people who haven't seen the 75-year-old show. But it's just one of those things where at the end you're sort of like, that could happen. And that's the freakiest thing. It's not like some superpower. It's not like some alien thing. It's like, that could happen. And that's when it twists to me the best. Of course, finding those ones are they're harder to do because they're almost never the ones with the superpowers or the alien ones, which, you know, the ones you can easily find.
Because there's so many of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
slower burn. It's better because like you find them out And then you're like, oh, okay, that one. So, yeah.
Something else that was new for me with Twilight Zone was not every episode was a happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times your protagonist, who you follow the entire show, will end up dying or going mad or getting punished because they did something wrong, you know, and instead of having redemption. And that's something that, you know, it was kind of eye-opening to, you know, a developing writer and a developing, you know, adolescent, where I'm seeing, you know, my eyes are kind of opening to a bigger world that's kind of, you know, more realistic. It's kind of funny that maybe in Twilight Zone I'm finding television that's more realistic, but at the same time, it kind of is. Everything else you watch that was a half hour long, it wrapped up with a nice, neat bow at the end.
Yeah.
You know, Cosby Show, Different Strokes, whatever.
What were you watching?
Yeah, it didn't have a laugh track, so I was totally confused.
When am I supposed to laugh? Burgess Meredith is acting really funny, but I don't know if I'm supposed to laugh yet. So, so the show itself was created by Rod Serling, and we were looking at two episodes today, Nick of Time and Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. These episodes were both written actually by Richard Matheson.
Matheson, yeah.
And he was one of three big writers for the show. You had Rod Serling, Richard Matheson, and Charles Beaumont. Those are the three guys that I think of when I think of writers on the show. The other thing is I think about Ray Bradbury, although he only did, I think they just did one story of his.
Wow.
But it's very much a Ray Bradbury type of show with the nostalgia and the horror, and some of it being that quiet horror that you just kind of, or the creeping horror kind of thing. But these two episodes were not chosen because they're both written by Richard Matheson. We'll talk about him in a moment. They were chosen because they both star William Shatner.
Yeah.
Captain Kirk. So, Dr. Jace, Steve, would one of you want to tell us or tell our audience just briefly what Nick of Time is like or is about in case they haven't watched it yet? Although if you haven't watched Nick of Time or Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, they're both on CBS.com. No, they're both on Hulu.com.
Yeah. So go
free.
And watch them. Go and watch them now.
Yeah.
And then come back and listen to the rest of the episode.
So, official warning, there are spoilers for these two episodes of The Twilight Zone. Spoilers. Spoilers. Spoilers.
Yeah,
so,
well, I'll do 20,000 feet.
Okay.
Nightmare 20,000 feet. Well, basically, it's a very simple plot. You have William Shatner, who is a salesman, and he's on an airplane, and he sees a gremlin who's trying to, you know, looks like he's trying to take out a wing of the plane. So he starts to freak out and, you know, gets nervous. The problem is nobody believes him. And the reason why nobody believes him, one, it's a gremlin on the wing who believes that there's gremlins. And two, previously, he had already had a nervous breakdown sometime before, and that also occurred on the plane. So his wife thinks, you know, that he needs to go back to get some help. And then it all kind of escalates when he tries to get a gun and starts to shoot. And then he eventually gets taken to get help. But at the very end of the story, they look at the wing and they see that, or there's, you look at the wing and it shows that there actually is damage.
Yeah.
And then Nick of Time is the other episode we're looking at today.
Nick of Time.
Steve, would you like to?
Yeah, sure. This is a honeymoon couple. They come into a small town. They go into a diner and there's this little thing on the table. It's a little fortune teller, and it's one of those things which gives ambiguous answers. It's sort of like, you know, the magic eight ball type of a thing, and you put a penny in and it would give you an ambiguous answer to a yes or no question. And so they come in, they sit down, they order drinks or whatever, and they just start, you know, for fun, like with most of the time these things, you know, that's what it was there for. They just start asking it, you know, simple questions, and the the husband, played by William Shatner, he is superstitious. At some point, you see he has a rabbit's foot and things like that. And so he starts to really get concerned about the answers, and he starts thinking that, you know, these answers seem a little bit too directed to be just a coincidence. And at one point, he actually calls. He was up for a promotion. He calls his office and finds out he did get the promotion. So he starts putting too much emphasis on these things, and they start to get obsessed with it. The wife, not so much. She thinks it's childish, and you know, it, even when he's trying to prove it, he's proving it with these, you know, ambiguous things. What do you think? Well, okay, yeah, that's that. See, it answered my question. You know, signs point to yes. So, oh, see? I mean, and it was, they're all ambiguous answers. I mean, that's how these things work. And then the little twist at the end is they finally say, you know what, we're going to get out of here. And they break free of the whole thing. And as they're leaving, another couple comes in and they sit down and they're saying, you know, can we leave? You know, can we leave the town now? And they put the thing in. He buries his face in his hand. He's like, do you think we could leave tomorrow? And he's putting so these people are still trapped. Now, William Shatner and his wife, they get to get out for whatever reason.
Right.
You know, they break free from that thing. But these other two people, they're just trapped in this superstitious cycle where just by random happenstance, they're believing what the thing is saying, and it just happens to be answering them in a ways that they're, you know, it's not conducive to their getting out of there.
Yeah.
So, it's a really interesting examination of superstition.
Right, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But first, let's talk a little bit about Richard Matheson. Richard Matheson, he wrote those two stories. If you do not know who he is, you know his work. If you've seen five episodes of Twilight Zone, you've probably seen a couple of his episodes, even if it's just randomly picked out. Yeah. But he also wrote the stories that, let's see, Legend of Hell House is his. The Incredible Shrinking Man is based on his book, The Shrinking Man. I Am Legend is his book, and that was filmed as The Omega Man, which was with Charlton Heston, yeah. And also Last Man on Earth, which was Vincent Price, and I Am Legend, which is Will Smith. He wrote Stir of Echoes, which was filmed into the movie Stir of Echoes. He wrote.
I hate it when they switch names like that around.
I know, it's crazy. He actually, you know, he did a lot of screenplays as well. And then he worked a lot on television. He did Steven Spielberg's television
Amazing
movie,
Stories.
Duel. Well, it's a television movie that's about a tractor trailer, 18-wheeler, that's chasing down a man in the California countryside. And he wrote that. That was one of Steven Spielberg's first projects. He wrote an episode of Star Trek. I mean, you've seen his work if you haven't, if you don't know his name. And then there's William Shatner. And so, guys, let me ask you guys this. First, let's talk about William Shatner, and then we'll talk about the episodes themselves. How did William Shatner do? What do you think? William Shatner.
I think William Shatner is very un-William Shatner-like. I think that, you know, at least what we think of his caricature from as Kirk, I think that he, to me, seems like a good young actor, you know, kind of on his way up kind of thing. And I thought he did a good job with it.
He does feel like a leading man before he really starts hitting those roles in movies and stuff like that.
Yeah. You look like if you don't know him as Captain Kirk, he looks like the stereotypical 1960s leading man.
And the interesting thing is he doesn't have like all the bravado that Kirk has, but he still has the, you know, the delivery that Kirk has.
And the energy.
Yeah.
Especially in Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, where he is playing that that guy who's going mad. He yeah. doesn't know what to do, and he's freaking out, man. And it does remind me. I mean, you've seen some episodes with Captain Kirk of the original series of Star Trek where, you know, he's going mad, and he's, you know, got that rage in his face, or he's got that fear on his face. And yeah. I mean, you can definitely see that this is not the beginning of his career, but it's early in his career. And you can see what he's known for is there. It's just not what he's doing.
Yeah.
That's the way I kind of look at it, but I like him in these, and I like it that it's before Captain Kirk, because, you know, we're seeing him in a more pure form, I guess. Because after Captain Kirk, he was pretty much just doing Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe not with T.J. Hooker so much, but
yeah, I was going to say, what about T.J. Hooker? One of the things that I think I've said this before, is that he has been extremely brilliant at reinventing himself over and over again. And what it's funny is that he doesn't take himself too seriously. I had a chance to see him live one time. I think I've shared this before, but he came out and just read tweets, and it was mm-hmm. hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's him. Because it's him reading the tweets. And, you know, anyone can mimic him, and it's like funny for about 5 seconds. But when it's him, you're like, how did he ever get this to work? You know, I mean, it's just him. But he has that, you know, gravitas, that magnetism that Kirk has, you know, even though he's 80 something.
Well, let's look at then the episodes and kind of talk about Nick of Time and Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. Let's yeah. start with Nick of Time. What are your just general thoughts about that episode? What do you like about it? What do you not like about it? What do you think?
I like the way it begins, because you see these two people in the car, and, you know, they just seem to be, you know, just cruising, and all of a sudden you very quickly realize that they're being towed.
Yes.
it's very reminiscent of Touch of Evil, which was an Orson Welles movie. Late 50s, and it started with this long pan of a car driving from one place to another place, and it lasted like 2, 3, 4 minutes. I didn't even know how long, and but it just kept going on and on, and the credits are rolling and everything. And this was back before they had, like, you know, all the tape in the world where they could just easily splice things together to make it look long. They had to shoot it that long.
Yeah.
So you're waiting for the cut and waiting for the cut. And this one, it came pretty quickly. It was just a little reminiscent of that, of Touch of Evil.
It definitely starts out in that place where a lot of Twilight Zones start out, just normal. You know, it's just, this could be any day at almost any town.
Mm-hmm.
And then slowly there's that build where you're adding things and changing the world, or changing the character's perception of the world. Mm-hmm. And so slowly, okay, well, we find out they're honeymooners. He's looking for a job promotion. And then what changes? How does the world change? They sit down and pump pennies into that little devil head fortune teller.
That's right. It's a pretty creepy looking thing.
You know, putting the devil head on there, I don't know if I would trust the fortune teller that has yeah. a demon on it. You know, yeah. maybe if it was like an angel, or even like a nice lady with a babushka on her head.
Or a bunny,
yeah, but the devil head.
Somehow I'm thinking a bunny would kind of lose the feel that that episode has.
Yes, I'm just saying I wouldn't put my money into the thing with the devil on it. Because yeah, that's yeah, not where I want to get my fortunes from.
Yeah, no kidding. No, I think as far as my favorite part of the whole story is that the young couple actually gets out. And then you see this other couple who never left, and it just kind of shows, you know, how some people can get wrapped up in the wrong things and never break free.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the couple that comes in after they leave, that couple could have been what they became.
Well,
like, they yeah, escaped, that... and then you see these guys come in, and it's that "there but for the grace of God" kind of thing.
Yep.
And I love that. And as a kid, I loved it. And that was that haunted me. Not like in a scary way, but in a, I would think about it and say, oh man. And I remember that couple come in after them, the looks on their faces. They're so harried, not hairy, harried. And do you feel like it holds up?
As an episode?
Today. Yeah. As an episode today and you're watching it, does it feel dated?
There's a lot of dated stuff in there because, you know, we don't have that type of fortune telling thing unless you're going to like a, you know, a carnival or something mm-hmm. like that. You know, they're not as readily as accessible.
Well, I think that it holds up in as that the things are not distracting. Like when I watch Wall Street, the computers in Wall Street are distracting because it's, I don't know, some of the things are done in a cheesy way. I think that it was done well. So I think it does translate because you can relate to it. We have, you know, people have those magic eight balls. I know a lady I work with has these, this little kind of thing on her desk with beads and you just spin it around and ask it a question and it gives you what the answer is. And usually it's not the one you want, you know, so it's something you can relate to. I think it's a very simple story in that it's like in one setting. So there's not a lot of special effects it's depended on. I think it holds up very well as a cautionary tale.
I don't know. I think there's a lot of things also with the, you know, like what they the superstitious stuff. You know, they're holding hands and something comes between them. So he says bread and butter. You know, I'm not sure how many people do that anymore.
Bread
you
and know? Butter. Yeah, I did not things know like what that even was supposed to be.
Yeah, it's one of that, and they slipped in these little superstitious things, like sort of subtly. You know, so you get the sense that he's a little superstitious, but then you all of a sudden think about it and you're like, wait a minute, he's got the bread and butter, he's got the lucky rabbit's foot, and you know, this is why he's so taken by this thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a mania with him. And you know, and at one point he even said, and this is another dated thing, he says, you know, he's talking about you know, he could have been an alcoholic with the bottles and the chandelier. And which is a reference to a movie, you know, an old movie, classic movie called The Lost Weekend by Ray Milland. And just a fantastic examination of a drunk who's, you know, trying to get over it, but he's faking it. And his brother comes in, he wants to take him for a weekend in the country. And he's hiding bottles outside the window on strings, and he's hiding bottles in the chandelier, and he's, you know, all this different stuff. So I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, it's a good episode. It's just it takes a lot of explaining if you know, someone is you know, younger than Dr. Jace.
There are interesting things, you know, there's the payphone, there's the jukebox. Jukeboxes and payphones are both still in our world, but definitely not a big part of our world.
Yeah.
I think Pizza Hut still does jukeboxes. And mm-hmm. payphones are, every once in a while you'll find a payphone, you'll see one. But you don't really need them anymore because we have cell phones.
Yeah,
I think the one thing for me that doesn't really work watching it this last time is when, and it's an editing problem, I think, more so than a story problem. They're told, although there's a story problem there too, they're told, or he asks, should we stay here? Are we safe here? Or should we stay here until 2:30? And it's probably not, you know. Should we stay here until 3:00? You're getting warmer or something like that.
Hmm.
And then, so they decide to leave before 3:00. And they're crossing the street. And I think the idea is that they can't see the car that's coming up behind a truck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so as they're walking in front of a stopped box truck. And then they end up walking into the path of a car. But it's a kind of an awkward editing situation. Of course, he's not thinking logically. Sorry. Someone's rubbing their hands or something.
I just itched. I'm sorry.
Okay. He's not thinking logically. But if they had left at 2:30, which supposedly the thing had told them not to do, that event wouldn't have happened because that car wouldn't have been there. And so right. The fact that they left at, you know, 2:59... they could have left earlier. They could have left. It just he puts a lot of stock in that, and right. But like you said, like I said, he's not thinking logically, and like mm-hmm. you said, he's already got a proclivity toward this superstition,
Yeah.
So,
but that's, you know, when you have that type of thing, that's your logic. You know, I call it flogic, because you're nice. basing your reality on things that make sense to you, but they don't make sense in a larger realm. You know,
let's explore that a little bit. Let's talk a little bit more about maybe the thematic elements then. What else do you see going on here as far as just the theme of the story, but also, you know, what we can kind of take away from the story? Because Twilight Zone it preached at you. You know, it was giving you these stories that had little messages and little mini morals, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And this definitely is one of those episodes that kind of had a little mini moral. What are you seeing there, guys? Okay, I'll go.
I was waiting for Dr. James.
Because I'm seeing him interpreting this stuff, but he's not able to act because of his interpretation. And so, like, he's seeing these messages and seeing these possible spiritual or messages from beyond, from a higher power of some sort. And he can't act on his own anymore because he is putting so much stock into his interpretation of these things are saying.
I think really, if you look at the deeper message, to me, it seems like kind of like the fear of fear or the power of fear. If there was a movie some time ago, I think The Mothman Prophecies, where there was this voice that would kind of warn this guy, and whatever the voice said, it happened. And it got to a point where the guy was so dependent on the voice that at the end, what the voice wanted him to do seemed counterintuitive. And it actually, what ends up happening, well, I don't want to ruin it, but it ends up, this cycle of fear, you know, take example, people with phobias, with extreme phobias. Well, to some extent, your fear does protect you, but it also harms you. Like people who are afraid to make relationships, well, they isolate themselves. So yes, they don't get hurt because they don't allow themselves to be hurt, but they hurt themselves because they don't allow themselves to love anyone else. And so I think the very nature of fear is to make you dependent on fear. Because in a very dysfunctional, unhealthy way, fear can protect you. And I think that's what happens with this situation. Well, yeah, the older couple never gets out, and they're safe because they're in this town, but they can never get out. Where this other couple goes, you know what, we're not going to live in this fear, so we're doing our own thing.
Well, and that older couple, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy kind of thing. He's coming in and asking, will we ever leave? Instead of just leaving, which is what William Shatner and his wife end up doing, is they just leave. They don't ask the thing, when should we leave? Should we leave? Or, you know, should we stay or anything like that? They're just saying, you know what? Let's go. And the other thing I like about this, though, is kind of going back to the alcoholic or to some of these other problems we're talking about. This is a interesting story because it's about this young marriage. And they're having to work through some things as a couple where I think sometimes she's looking at him and wondering, who did I just marry? Yeah. I'm on a honeymoon with this guy. I don't even know if I know him. But she also supports him, and she pushes him toward doing what he needs to do. And I really appreciate that about her. And I appreciate what I appreciate about him is that he's following and saying, you know what, you're right. Let's get out of here. Let's just go. I'm going to do this. It's hard for me to do it. But you're my wife. I love you. And she's, you know, you're my husband. I love you. Let's get out of here. You need to get away from this thing.
Yeah.
And so it's an interesting marriage, too. A story about marriage, I should say. Mm-hmm. So, any other thoughts about some of the thematic elements?
Like I said, the whole superstitious coding that the entire thing is dipped in is just, you know, that's how many people in this world think. And it's kind of sad that it has to be that way, but
Well, they put meaning on things that don't necessarily even have the power to have meaning.
They give it power.
Yeah.
They give these things power.
And so that devil-headed fortune giver, did it have power? That's the question I want to ask you guys, just to end on here. Do you think that it actually had the power to tell the future, or do you think that William Shatner was projecting that power on it?
Well, I think...
Within the context of the story, of course.
I think within the context of the story, both, in that it seemed to have some kind of power, but at the same time, that's the nature of fear. It has the power that you give it. And it's kind of like a person who's always critical of people who always hang out. They always have something to criticize, but they rarely have actually answers, real life-giving answers. So in my opinion, it was both. It was a self-fulfilling prophecy, but at the same time, it's Twilight Zone. So there was a little bit of supernatural because of all of the, happenstances. There's a little too many of them just to be coincidence.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I think this is one of those things which it could really happen in real life if someone, found one of these things and just asked it questions and it just, for whatever reason, just kept answering him the way it did. So I don't think it had any actual power, no.
Michael Poteet on Facebook said, I asked for comments about it, and he said, I love them both, talking about both of the episodes we're talking about here. But Nick of Time is the stronger of the two, ironically, this being the Twilight Zone, because there's not one supernatural thing about it. It's just a compelling character study around the question of whether we will take responsibility for living our own lives. And then Harold Clark, who I'm going to read some stuff from him in just a second, he replied to Michael and said, that's an interesting thought, that there was no supernatural element per se.
Mm-hmm.
And I do find that interesting. You're right, Steve. This is one of those that could be, you know, just a projection of real life on there. But obviously it's a exaggerated, I guess. Maybe that'll work, yeah. Right. Exaggerated example of real life. But you do have people like that who just mm-hmm. can't act because what's their horoscope say?
Yeah. So,
let's then move on then to Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. This one is probably the more famous of the two. Probably one of the most famous, period, of Twilight Zone. So what do you guys think about Nightmare at 20,000 Feet? Does this one hold up?
Well, I'll just tell you, every time I fly, I think of this one.
Yes, for good reason. I mean, it's very memorable.
Yeah, there's very little outside of some of the, circumstantial, I don't know if they actually give you sleeping medicine and stuff on planes and stuff anymore. But, you know, outside of stuff like that, I think this one holds up really well because, you know, lots of people fly, you know, and sometimes you see things that seem funny and, you know, very few people across the board, some do, but very few people fly often enough that they're just, you know, completely comfortable with flying. So, you know, you have this guy who has a history of a little craziness and he thinks he sees something and it just seems real to him and he just acts on it. And, you know, all of a sudden you realize at the end that, hey, wait a minute. You know, I watched this one with my son, a 12-year-old son. And, I kept, you know, trying to ask him, saying, you know, what do you think? Is this, what do you think? And he, I think he thought it was sort of like, you know, in the guy's head that the guy was crazy. So at the end, when it shows the actual, you know, stuff there being, having been ripped up, he was just like, whoa, because it wasn't what he expected. It caught him the right way.
Yeah. Yeah. I showed it to my son too. He really enjoyed this one. I did want to tell you guys, I have this book called The Twilight Zone Companion, and mm-hmm. there's a story in here I'm going to read right now. This is Rod Serling talking. He says, Matheson and I were going to fly to San Francisco. This is several months after they shot this episode. It was like 3 or 4 weeks after the show was on the air, and I had spent 3 weeks in constant daily communication with Western Airlines preparing a given seat for him, having the stewardess close the curtains when he sat down, and I was going to say, Dick, open it up. I had this huge blown-up poster stuck on the outside of the window so that when he opened it, there would be this gremlin staring at him. So what happened was we get on the plane. There was the seat. He sits down. The curtains are closed. I lean over and I say, "Dick," at which point they start the engines and it blows the thing away. It was an old prop airplane. He never saw it. And I had spent hours in the planning of it. I would lie in bed thinking how we could do this. So,
wow.
And here's the other interesting thing about this episode. Do you guys know who directed this episode? Richard Donner.
Oh, really? That's right.
Yeah, he directed this episode. The again, same book that I read this in. He didn't understand why they gave it to him because he had never worked with special effects before. And so it's kind of interesting because here he is sitting down, you know, and directing this episode. This is the first time he directed anyone flying, but it wouldn't be the last, of course, because he directed Christopher Reeve in the original Superman movie. But yeah, I like this episode. I think it really holds up. I realize what I would like to see is I want to see this story told from the perspective of the creature on the wing. Because that creature, he's very curious. I mean, I don't know what he's doing, but I love the way he kind of, the ghost-like quality of him floating off the wing.
Like when he, like, goes up to the window and looks like he's trying to blow on it, like, hey.
Yeah. When he kind of cocks his head to the side, like, what is this guy? He's looking at me, isn't he? I've just been seen. So I would like to see that story told from his perspective, but... So let's talk a little bit about unless you guys have some more thoughts about the episode in general, let's talk about some of the thematic elements of this thing. What are you seeing here in this story?
This one is interesting because it explores, you know, a belief system. In this guy's belief system, this thing is true,
mm-hmm.
but everyone around him doesn't believe it. So what do you do when faced with that? You know, do you give it up or do you act out on it knowing that you're going to be seen as crazy, knowing that you're, you know, it's not going to end well for you, but you know you have to. You know, I mean, what if he didn't? Everyone on the plane dies, including him. You just, you know, you can't go that far and then not, you know, metaphorically or, you know, realistically pull the trigger, you know? So it's a very interesting examination of that. And in some ways it's affirming because, you know, in some ways as Christians, we're told, you know, well, what we believe isn't real. It's foolish. It's, you know, it's disproven or whatever, but we know it's real. You know, so at what point do we say, well, I'll call myself a Christian, but I won't believe in that stuff that people... Yeah, do you do that? No, of course you don't. You keep doing it. You keep going. And, you know, so I think in that way, it's affirming as a Christian.
Jace, you got any thoughts on this episode?
Yeah, I mean, I think it deals with one of the most basic fears. You know, you have fear of the dark, you have fear of being alone, you have a fear when you're flying in enclosed spaces. And that, I think, it combines two great fears. One is you're flying, you're in an enclosed space, flying above the earth, which is scary for the average person. At the same time, there's an even deeper fear that many people have. It's, what if people don't believe me? You know, we use words a lot to help people to shape what we want them to think about us, about life, and what happens if they don't believe us. And I think, you know, that's a powerful, you know, when TV shows, they have a guy who goes undercover. I think it was Psych. I've seen this done a couple times. But they go into, you know, into the psych ward, and then they get trapped there. You know, they get trapped in there. There's that. Well, no one's going to believe you because they think you're delusional. So I think that it's it's a classic. There's a reason why it's one of the most famous of all the Twilight Zones, if not the most famous one.
Well, yeah, and it has a perfect storm of just that mania that he has, but then the creature design, which is really creepy, and then, like you were saying, actual fears. I again, though, this is another one with a happy ending. He rescues the plane. He saves the plane. There's some vindication there in that they're alive, although who knows, who knows when they're going to find out that he actually was telling the truth, that there was some damage to the wing of the plane or whatever.
Right.
Of course, as he's doing this, he blows out a window and almost falls out the window. He's like,
yeah.
That's a creepy scene as well, where he's dangling out the window trying to shoot the gun.
But... it would be an interesting follow-up episode where, you know, someone finds the dead body of a gremlin, you know, that has been shot and smashed onto the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what would you do?
Well, but that's part of the creature's story. That's that follow-up episode where it's about the story from that creature's perspective.
Yeah.
No one believed him, and then he got shot. No one believed him that he was seen by a human. They don't see us. Wait, he just got shot. They did see him.
Yeah.
But yeah, the other thing I was reminded of, and this goes along with what you were saying, Steve, was that idea of evil triumphs when good people do nothing. Mm-hmm. If he hadn't acted, if he had just let himself close his eyes, fall asleep, do what they were telling him to do, and he couldn't let himself do that. He had to act, even though he was the only person who believed it. And yep. In some ways, he had to convince himself, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I saw it. I know I did. Yep. I'm not crazy. And he had to act on that. And if he hadn't acted, the plane probably would have gone down. Or at least it would have had to make an emergency landing with one engine out.
Yeah, and it's an interesting dichotomy, the two episodes, because in one, he's maniacal and wrong, you know, but he breaks free. And then the other one, he's maniacal and right.
And in both, it's about action. In one, he is inactive because of he's trying to count on something outside of him mm-hmm. to tell him what to do. And in the other one, he has to decide to act. In both of these episodes, William Shatner has to decide to act, to pull away from, in the first episode, in the Nick of Time, to pull away from the fortune teller, and in Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, to pull away from his doubt and everyone else's doubt about him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is some more links than just the same writer and same actor.
Mm-hmm.
So, any other thoughts before I move on to some of the listener feedback we got about this?
Dr. Jace, anything else? Did you fall asleep?
No, I mean, I'm just trying to think. I can't think of anything other than the fact that both of these William Shatner episodes are actually pretty good. In my opinion, I like them both. They're of the two most memorable ones that I can think of.
Yeah, absolutely. For different reasons, but yeah. Absolutely. Bill Lawson said, Shatner rocked the average workaday traveler in an impossible situation in Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. Thus begins the adorable, ineffable, over-the-top career of an American legend. Seriously, though, this episode still makes me a bit jumpy whenever I experience turbulence on a flight. When I first feel bumps in the air, I casually pull the shade and don't open it until we are safely on the ground. And that was also that was one of our Facebook comments.
Well, that's guys, funny, but it's funny that people have that reaction to it, because if you take this episode as what it should be, you know, you should say to yourself, "I want to know, if that thing is there."
What you need to be the watchman in the night.
Exactly. What if you opened it up and it was there? What would you do?
That's what I would like to know.
Would you just close the window and gently go away and just watch the entire thing go up in a ball of flame?
I'd pull out my phone and record it and then show it to everyone to make sure that they see it too.
That's, yes. You know, they remade this in the 80s with John Lithgow with the Twilight Zone movie. If they remade it now, 2013, I don't think that they could do this episode because of what you just said, Dr. Chase.
Yeah.
Look, no, see my phone? Oh, yeah, you're right. There is something out there.
Yeah, we better lay down. We better land right now.
And it would be funny if you really did it.
Yeah,
the phone kept glitching. You know, I accidentally took a picture of my thumb. You know, oh wait a minute. Didn't go up.
You know, but everyone would open their things. Everyone would start taking pictures of the gremlin. It'd go up on YouTube. You know, a couple people might get 10,000-20,000 hits, and they'd end up on some cable show in search of gremlins on Animal Planet. So. We have a listener named Harold Clark, who apparently does Bible studies based on Twilight Zone for his church. I don't know if it's a youth group. It seems like he's working with younger people. But he sent me his Sunday school lesson or Bible study lesson. I'm not going to read the entire thing because we are talking 5 Microsoft Word pages. But I'm going to read some choice selections. Talking about Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. He says, for me, the episode hinges on the iconic scene when Bob Wilson, Shatner, pulls back the curtain to reveal the gremlin pressed up against the window. Prior to this, Bob had already seen the gremlin, so he knew it was a problem. Even though others didn't see it, he did and knew it was going to be an issue. So he pulls the curtain over the window and attempts to calm down, but he's still anxious and Bob has 2 choices. Pull back the curtain or leave it in place. Seems like such a simple choice, doesn't it? Now let's parallel this to our Christian faith. There's a problem that we're facing as Christians. What choices do we have to face this problem? First off, we can leave the curtain closed and realize that we have the God of the universe in our corner. He can handle anything. Or you can keep the curtain. However, as humans, we can easily take that too far and turn into ostriches. When a problem arises, we can put our head in the sand and ignore the problem. God will take care of it as we run away from the problem. Or we just plug our ears, close our eyes, and pretend the problem doesn't exist. Having faith in God does not mean we simply ignore the problem. Having faith means even when we doubt, we believe that God somehow, some way will get us through the tough times. He chose to open the curtain to face his fear. We as Christians have that same choice. Instead of running away from the problem, we can be active in overcoming our problem. Being a Christian doesn't mean that when we have a problem, we curl up in a ball and do nothing. Our God calls us to active faith. And he gives a number of scripture references there. He also sent some notes about Nick of Time. Where it's talking about the biggest thing he saw from that is the Bible warning against seeking help and guidance from sources other than God's, like horoscopes, palm readers, psychics, and that sort of thing.
All right.
And then he says, perhaps it's our lack of patience that causes us to get in these situations. We have a problem and we want to answer and we want it right now. Barring an answer from God, we look to quick solutions and fixes elsewhere. And then he recommends, for a contrast to Nick of Time, watching an episode called The Fever. It has a man, he says, it too has a man addicted to a machine, in this case a slot machine, and it also has a wife who attempts to help him out of this destructive path. However, she is not successful. As a side note, he has taught that episode before and concentrates on the concept of sin, not gambling, but the sin of omission, not doing the right thing we know we should be doing. So, yeah, that is our listener feedback for this episode. I want to say, Harold Clark, A, plus, you did your homework big time. So thank you very much. He also sent us a long list of possible pairings that we could do, like this one being the William Shatner pairing. Every time we do Twilight Zone episode for this series, we're going to take 2 episodes that are linked one way or another.
Yeah.
We decided to start with William Shatner because it was the first and easiest thing I thought of and 2 really classic episodes. So,
yeah.
We pretty much go the easy way out every time you're.
when it comes to that, yeah, I should be looking more toward William Shatner and Nightmare at 20,000 Feet and not take that easy way out and just keep the curtain closed. I should, actively work at it. But
see, I don't know how easy it's going to come up. It's going to be coming up with 100 iconic characters from sci-fi, fantasy, and fiction. You know,
that's going to take some work. Yes,
I don't know if we always go to the easy way.
I already have my 100.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's great.
I have not started.
The gauntlet has been thrown.
Yeah, yeah. I do foresee one thing that normally happens when we do lists that will not happen, and that is I do not see Steve trying to sneak in so he can get 150, you know, by saying, well, these characters go together and these characters... No, I have a feeling that Steve's going to take those characters that go together and spread them out so he can have, 100, because this is not going to be easy. Especially when you consider the breadth of, you know, movies, books, comics, TV.
See, just with the X-Men and the Avengers, I could get like 80.
Well, you could take the easy way out there. There just sit down with your Marvel's official handbook to the Marvel Universe.
That's right. I think it's Annihilus,
Zax,
Angel.
Guys, I can tell you, it's harder than you think it is, because when you really start to go through the series that you like and you start pulling out characters, the truth is we could probably sit down and do 500. I think all three of us could easily come up with 500 characters. It's not as easy as you think.
It'll be interesting, because when we start compiling lists together, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. So your homework, listeners, is to send us your list of your top 10. And we're going to weigh those into our list of our top 100. And that's going to help us to determine the top slots, especially. Especially if we have... What?
I think I'm going to go all obscure.
Steve, go for it.
Just you have all
to, you're supposed to pick the best, not the most obscure. What are the best ones? So you have to be
What if I think obscure characters are the best?
Well, you can definitely put it out there, but if you're purposefully leaving out, you know, like some of the A-listers just because you want to be unique, then, well, whatever.
I'll say this. A listener response and listener interaction on this one is going to make the list, I think. It's going to make our top few be the best of the best. Because with just the three of us, yeah, we're coming up with a list of 100. So that's kind of laying the groundwork. But with listeners writing in and saying, you know, I think this guy's number one, and we have four listeners saying that guy's number one, and we have Dr. J saying that guy's number three, and Steve saying he's number two, and me saying he's number three, that's going to bump that guy up, because we're going to be like, oh, well, this is cool. This is the kind of thing we're looking for.
And it's heroes and villains. I mean,
it's characters. Like, yeah.
Just characters.
It's characters. So, all right.
So what exactly constitutes a character?
Someone who is a character in a story.
So it has to be like something that has some.
Can't
sort
be
of...
the Enterprise, but it could be the TARDIS.
Why couldn't it be the Enterprise?
Because the Enterprise doesn't have a character.
It does have a character. What if I argue with that it does?
Then you'd be arguing wrong.
What if I said that the TARDIS doesn't have a character?
You'd be a little bit more, you have a little more to stand on there, but not much. So thank you for listening, everyone. Guys, do you have anything to add?
No cheating. No sneaking.
Dr. Jace?
Not really. I was trying to think of something clever, but reality is I just want to hear what our listeners have to say on the top 10 characters of all time for fantasy sci-fi.
And I'm the one who checks the email. So if you cheat and send in 12, no one will know. You can cheat. Steve will never know.
You will know.
I'll know.
And you won't let that happen.
I totally will let that happen. You're right, Steve. I won't. I totally will. Okay, so...
I hear a weird whispering sound.
Yeah, I think it's your dog, Steve. Yeah. all right, well, thank you for listening again. And don't forget, you can go to our website, strangersandaliens.com, where you'll find news, reviews. You can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/strangersandaliens. On Twitter, where we are Strange and Alien, all one word. And you can call our voicemail at 1-804-37-ALIEN. That's 1-804-372-5436. That call, the message is limited to 3 minutes, but you can call back and we'll go ahead and stitch it together so it's all one message. And yeah, we want to hear from you. We are excited to hear from you. And thank you for, like I said, thank you for joining us and spending time with us and letting us invade your ear space. So,
Space Invaders.
So, guys, you want to say your farewells?
I'll say Jace's farewells, and he can say mine.
I don't care how you do it. Just do it.
Fare thee well.
Okay, so I'm saying goodbye for you?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I apologize profusely. I'm generally wrong, and Dr. Jace is always right. Thank you. Goodbye.
I get to say my own farewell. So until next time, everyone, Godspeed. You've been listening to the Strangers and Aliens podcast, hosted by Ben Avery, Steve MacDonald, and Dr. Jace O'Neill. Our music was composed and mixed by Tim Leffel. Please join in the conversation by visiting our website, strangersandaliens.com, where you will find show notes, articles, reviews, and more. You can also email us directly at podcast@strangersandaliens.com, or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/strangers, or you can leave us a voicemail on the Strangers and Aliens hotline. Just call 1-804-37-ALIEN and leave your message. And once again, thanks for listening.